Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Hong Kong police on Wednesday fired tear gas and rubber bullets at protesters outside government headquarters. The crowd of mostly young people was protesting a proposed bill that would permit criminal suspects to be sent to mainland China for trial. The violence came after protesters forced the delay of a legislative debate over the bill. It has led to another major political crisis for the semi-autonomous city. The crowd occupied major downtown streets, overturning barriers outside the government building. Protesters could be seen throwing rocks, bottles, umbrellas, and other objects at police. The police answered by firing tear gas, pepper spray, rubber bullets, and water at the protesters. A Hong Kong police spokesman defended the decision to use tear gas and other non-deadly weapons. He said officers would not have done so if they were not facing their own danger, including possible death. Hong Kong Police Commissioner Stephen Lo Wai Chung described the demonstration as a riot. "There's no need to hurt innocent people to express your opinions," he said, adding that people should not do anything they will regret for the rest of their lives. His words added to concerns that Hong Kong's government is using public disturbance laws to intimidate political protesters. The government said Wednesday morning's legislative session would be changed to a later time. Some businesses closed for the day. Students boycotted classes. And unions called for labor strikes. A protester who gave only his first name, Marco, told the Associated Press, "We want the government to just set the legislation aside and not bring it back." Another protester, who gave her name only as King, said, "We have to stand up for our rights or they will be taken away." Hong Kong currently limits extraditions only to authorities with which it has existing agreements. China has been excluded from such agreements because of concerns over its human rights record and judicial system. Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam had said earlier that the extradition bill seeks to prevent Hong Kong from becoming a place for criminals to hide. Lam said the government has changed the bill in recent months to increase human rights protection. She said that she had not received any orders from China to push the bill forward. Under its one country, two systems rule, Hong Kong was guaranteed the right to its own social, legal, and political systems for 50 years following its handover from British rule in 1997. However, some observers have said China's ruling Communist Party ignores that agreement by forcing through unpopular legal changes. On Wednesday, China's foreign ministry repeated its support for the bill. A ministry spokesman denied China has been interfering in the city's business in ways that violate the handover agreements. He said, Hong Kong people's rights and freedoms have been fully guaranteed in accordance with law. Chinese President Xi Jinping has said in the past that he would not permit Hong Kong to have greater self-rule or be used as a base to challenge the Communist Party's rule.
Uganda's health ministry reported this week the first cross-border case of Ebola from Congo. The disease began to spread in that country last year. The discovery is a setback for health workers who for months tried to prevent the virus from crossing the border. A 5-year-old Congolese boy is at a hospital in a western area near the Congo border, Ugandan Health Minister Jane Acheng told reporters. The boy is being kept away from other people except his family and hospital workers. The case adds pressure on the World Health Organization to declare the Ebola outbreak a worldwide health emergency. The spread is the second deadliest in history and is continuing. In April, a WHO expert committee decided that the outbreak was not yet an international threat, but that it was of deep concern. Usually, the United Nations agency considers a declaration of a worldwide health emergency when a disease crosses borders. The Ebola outbreak is in an area new to the disease. People reportedly are resisting efforts to contain it. It was not clear when the boy entered Uganda. A WHO statement said he crossed the border at Bwera on Sunday with his family. He was treated at Kagondo Hospital and was then taken to Bwera Ebola Treatment Unit, the WHO said. Confirmation of Ebola was made Tuesday by the Uganda Virus Institute. The Ministry of Health and WHO have sent a rapid response team to Kasese to identify other people who may be at risk, the WHO said. In a separate statement, Congo's health ministry said the boy from Mabalako arrived Monday at Congo's Kasindi border crossing. At least 12 family members also appeared to have the disease and were taken to a restricted center at the local hospital for observation. 6 family members fled while being sent to an Ebola treatment center in Beni. They crossed into Uganda while Congolese border officials warned Ugandan medical workers, Congo's health ministry said. Ugandan officials found the family members at the Kagondo Hospital, where the boy's Ebola case was confirmed. Officials from the 2 countries will meet Wednesday about the possibility of sending the family back to Beni in Congo for treatment, the health ministry said. I'm Susan Shand.
Internet hackers have stolen tens of thousands of pictures of travelers and vehicles collected at the United States border. U.S. Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, officials confirmed the attack on Monday. The agency said the photographs were stolen from the computer network of a contractor that captures the images for the government. Officials did not name the contractor. A CBP spokesman told the Associated Press that the agency believes that the incident involved the photographs of fewer than 100,000 people. Images were taken of travelers in vehicles entering and leaving the United States at a single land border crossing over 1.5 months, the spokesman said. The images also included license plates of vehicles crossing the border. The CBP said in a statement that it learned of the cyber attack on May 31st. The agency said the government contractor violated CBP policies by copying the pictures to the company's computer network. Officials said only the contracting company's network was hit in the cyber attack. The CBP's computer systems remained safe. The CBP statement said none of the image information had so far been identified as appearing on the internet or the dark web. The dark web is a part of the internet that cannot be found through normal search engines. It uses digital tools to hide identifying information and is often used for criminal activity. The CBP said it was working with other law enforcement agencies to actively investigate the attack. The agency said it had removed from service all equipment related to the incident and was closely watching all CBP work done by the contractor. CBP takes its privacy and cybersecurity responsibilities very seriously and demands all contractors to do the same, the agency statement said. U.S. Customs and Border Protection is part of the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS. The DHS described its automated vehicle license readers in a 2017 privacy document. The document said the readers are used for identifying, catching, and removing individuals illegally entering the United States at and between ports of entry or otherwise violating U.S. law. The license plate information is checked against existing records shared among 13 federal agencies, the AP reported. Representative Benny Thompson of Mississippi serves as chairman of the U.S. House Committee on Homeland Security. Thompson noted that the incident was the second major privacy breach at DHS this year. In March, the DHS's Inspector General announced the Federal Emergency Management Agency had wrongly released to a contractor the personal information of 2.3 million U.S. disaster survivors. Thompson said in a statement that U.S. officials must ensure we are not expanding the use of biometrics at the expense of the privacy of the American public. The British computer security website, The Register, said the hacker responsible informed the publication in late May of the attack. The Register identified the government contractor as the company Perceptix. The company has not yet publicly discussed the hacking incident. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Imagine a time machine. You've just climbed into it for the purpose of visiting the United States in the 1950s. What would you expect to find? In the 1950s, America was a nation whose population was growing as never before. It was a nation where the popular culture of television was both reflecting and influencing its lifestyle. But it was also a nation that believed it was on the edge of nuclear war. Americans were happy to put World War II behind them. The war ended in 1945. People were hopeful. They thought the world would be peaceful for a while. By 1950, however, political tensions were high again. The United States and the Soviet Union were allies in World War II. But after the war, they became enemies in what came to be known as the Cold War. Communists took control of one Eastern European nation after another. The Soviet Union, led by Joseph Stalin, strengthened its armed forces. However, the United States thought America alone possessed the most powerful weapon of all, the atomic bomb. But in 1949, a United States Air Force plane discovered strange conditions in the atmosphere. What was causing them? The answer came quickly. The Soviet Union had tested its own atomic bomb. The nuclear race was on. The two nations competed to build weapons of mass destruction. A doomsday clock on the cover of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists warned of a growing danger of nuclear destruction. Members of that group were afraid of what science had produced, and even more afraid of what it could produce. By 1949, the time on the doomsday clock was 3 minutes to midnight. In 1950, North Korea invaded South Korea. The Korean War increased efforts in the United States to develop a weapon even more deadly than the atomic bomb. That weapon was the hydrogen bomb. The Soviets were also working to develop their own hydrogen bomb. Some Americans built bomb shelters in their backyards, hoping to have a safe place for their families in case of a nuclear attack. Other Americans, however, were tired of being afraid. After years of sacrifice, they wanted to enjoy the good life in a growing economy. 1952 was a presidential election year. Americans elected Dwight Eisenhower, a military hero of World War II. The years after the war produced the baby boom generation. In 1950, there were 24 million young children in America. By 1960, that number was 35 million. More families meant the need for more houses, and bigger families needed bigger houses. In 1950 alone, almost 1.5 million new homes were built in America. Most of these new houses were located in suburbs, the areas outside cities. People moved to the suburbs because they thought the schools there were better than city schools. They also liked having more space for their children to play in. More space meant children had room to lay out electric train sets. In a lot of American homes, playing with electric trains was an activity that brought the whole family together. Television ads for Lionel Trains even featured baseball great Joe DiMaggio.
Lionel Trains proudly present the Joe DiMaggio Show, starring the Yankee clipper Joe DiMaggio himself.
The late 1950s brought the Barbie doll and a big circular tube of colorful plastic called the hula hoop. People had to learn to move their hips in a circular motion, like a hula dancer in Hawaii, to spin it around their body. Hula hoops became hugely popular in America. Also popular was the poodle cut, not for dogs, but for women who wanted to look stylish. They fixed their hair into lots of small curls, like the hair on a poodle. Actress Mary Martin had made the poodle cut famous in the musical South Pacific. That play opened on Broadway in New York in 1949 and ran into the early 1950s.
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend.
In Hollywood, one of the biggest movie stars of the 1950s was Marilyn Monroe. She starred in films like Gentlemen Prefer Blondes in 1953. Her platinum blonde hairstyle also became popular among American women.
I woke up this morning, you know, and the sun was shining, and it was nice, and all that type of stuff. And the first thing, I saw you. And I said, no. Boy, this is going to be one terrific day.
Another famous actor was James Dean, best known for the 1955 movie Rebel Without a Cause. That same year, he died in a car accident at the age of 24. In literature, there were writers and poets who came to be known as the Beat Generation. These included Jack Kerouac, Gregory Corso, and Allen Ginsberg. To them, much of life in 1950s America was empty and meaningless. The painter Jackson Pollock represented a spirit of rebellion in art. Pollock would drop paint onto a canvas. What did his works mean? People had to decide for themselves. In music, the rebel was Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll.
You know I can be found, sit home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please tell the phone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true.
Baby, Elvis was a 21-year-old truck driver when he sang on television for the first time. Some parents and religious leaders thought he was a bad influence. They thought the way he moved his body to the music was too suggestive. But young people screamed for more. They listened to Elvis's music on records, on the radio, and on the television program American Bandstand. American Bandstand became the most popular dance party in America. Every week, young people danced to the latest songs in front of the TV cameras. But it wasn't all rock and roll.
Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. 'Tis twilight time.
Whether on bandstand-type television programs or at local record hops or at home, young Americans and their parents dance cheek-to-cheek to romantic ballads as well. Television in the 1950s included dramas acted live every week. And there were quiz shows and game shows and comedy programs. If Elvis was the king of rock and roll, Lucille Ball was the queen of comedy. During the 1950s, millions of Americans watched I Love Lucy. Lucille Ball starred with her husband, Desi Arnaz. They played Lucy and Ricky Ricardo. Ricky is a Cuban band leader in New York. Lucy is a housewife who wishes she could be famous like her husband.
What'll I have to do?
You're gonna get me back on the television show.
How?
I don't know how. But if you don't...
All right.
I will,
Ricky. I'll get you back on the show. Don't even think of what you'll do if I don't.
Lucille Ball and I Love Lucy were both big influences on generations of entertainers and TV comedy producers. Variety shows offered a mix of entertainment. Americans watched shows hosted by comics like Milton Berle, Jackie Gleason, and Sid Caesar. Ed Sullivan was not a comedian, but for years, his show brought new acts into American homes every Sunday night. Television shows were all in black and white. But one night in 1953, Americans got their own time machine glimpse into the future of TV. It happened with an announcement during Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows.
This is Richard Harkness in Washington. This week will long be remembered in the annals of television. For on Thursday, December 17th, the Federal Communications Commission approved compatible color television.
That meant that owners of TV sets could still watch programs broadcast in color in black and white instead of having to buy a new set. Color TV's popularity grew quickly, and the prices of color TVs came down, meaning more color TVs in American homes and more programs produced in color.
The following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
During the 1950s, most of the people who appeared on television were white. If black actors appeared, they were usually in jobs working for white people. But in real life, a civil rights movement was beginning to gather strength. Legal battles were fought to end racial separation, especially in public schools. In 1954, the United States Supreme Court made a historic ruling. The case was known as Brown versus Board of Education. The court ruled that the requirement in some states for racially separate schools was unconstitutional. The court rejected the idea that schools for black students could be separate but equal to those attended by white students. By the 1960s, the civil rights movement would shake American society. Dwight Eisenhower was president for most of the 1950s. He faced the problems of communism, nuclear threats, and racial tensions. Ike had a calm way of speaking to the public. Many Americans saw him as a fatherly president. They thought that even in a dark and dangerous world, everything would be all right. Were they correct? We'll try to answer that in future programs.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.